Welcome back to Hash Right Up. Today is all about Wall Street. I'm speaking to Mike Colonese, a sell-side analyst for H.C. Wainwright. He covers mining stocks, predominantly in the mining space, provides research to investors, and helps to raise money for public miners. So a great contact to speak to when it comes to public mining stocks and evaluations and how that all works. It's a very different angle to the mining world that I haven't yet covered, so very excited to have spoken to him. This episode is sponsored by the Orange Group, who have connected me to Mike and made this happen, so thank you very much. This episode also needs to be prefaced by saying that there's a link in the description with some disclosures, because we are talking about publicly traded mining companies and there's always disclosure to be made there. So make sure to have a look in the description below and check that out as well. Hash Right Up starts now. Enjoy. All right, everybody. Hash Right Up is back. One more episode. Welcome, everyone. I'm speaking today to Mike Colonese, who I introduced briefly just before. He is a sell-side analyst for a company called H.C. Wainwright, a investment boutique, as he says. And he focuses on covering Bitcoin mining stock, which is a very different angle to the industry that I have not yet covered. So excited to speak to you today. Hi, Mike. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Josie. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. We are at block height 847622. Our 14-day hash rate is at 585. Hash price is at 56. The last recording was recorded yesterday, so not that many changes. A little less than 144 blocks since the last recording. Mike, sell side analyst on Wall Street. What the hell does that mean? Explain that, please.
It's a great question. It means a few things. So again, I appreciate you having me. Excited to be here, Jesse, on the podcast today. So as you mentioned, I'm a sell side equity research analyst for a boutique investment bank. Been in the industry for about 15 years now, where I've covered a wide range of sectors, ranging from traditional financials, fintech, now crypto. My experience covering the traditional financial sector and fintech companies has really given me a unique perspective and appreciation for Bitcoin, an asset class and monetary system that I'm incredibly passionate about. As it relates to sort of the day-to-day into the life of an equity research analyst. So I cover 10 stocks in the crypto space currently, most of which are Bitcoin mining companies. And if you think about, again, some of the day-to-day here, what we're doing is we're analyzing the fundamentals of a business, just like any equity research analyst would do. So we're diving through press releases, financial statements, investor presentations, speaking with senior management teams of all of these Bitcoin mining companies to really form a view on the company as it relates to current operational performance and our forecast as to where the company could be, 1 to 2 to 3 years down the road. And what that involves is us, constructing very in-depth financial models on the organization and coming up with a valuation for the business and look at that valuation relative to where the stock currently trades in the market to determine if we should be buy, neutral, or sell on the stock. So that's really kind of a high-level view. Happy to dive in deeper if you'd like as well. A quick background on the company. So H.C. Wainwright, as I mentioned, is a boutique investment bank. We're dedicated to the crypto sector and specifically the Bitcoin mining industry. We've raised more capital for the publicly traded miners than any other bank on the street and really by a wide margin. And we aim to provide the best and most comprehensive research on the sector.
What makes you experts in this? Why are you so far ahead when it comes to raising money?
We were the first and we've been the most active. So if you look at some of the largest miners today, they've utilized our services to help raise financing. And on the flip side, I sit on the other side of the wall where I provide the comprehensive analysis of their businesses and the sector. And I would say what differentiates us from a research perspective is, to my knowledge, I am the only full-time sell-side crypto-specific analyst doing the job here. I know a lot of my counterparts pick up maybe some of the miners or crypto on a, more or less on a part-time basis, where they're following other companies and they just extended their coverage to, you know, crypto. But here I am a full-time dedicated crypto and Bitcoin mining analyst.
Okay, I already have so many questions. I need to structure this live here a little bit. First of all, might be a very ignorant question. What's the difference between sell side and buy side
Yeah,
analyst?
it's a great question, Jesse, and I'm glad you asked it. So, a sell side analyst, typically, we work for investment banks, whereas a buy side analyst would work for a hedge fund or another asset management type company. Fundamentally, our roles are very similar in that we're doing bottom up fundamental equity research and analysis on publicly traded companies to value their businesses and to make investment decisions. But I would say the biggest difference from being a sell side analyst is my research is shared throughout Wall Street. So you have the hedge funds and the asset managers that are reviewing my research of the mining space to help inform their investment decisions, right? Whereas they're using that research in addition to their own internal research to determine what miner is best to buy in their portfolio. So that's what it means by buy side, right? So they're buying the shares of the publicly traded company, whereas we are more or less working on capital raises on the banking side, and then in terms of my role, providing thorough research for these institutions.
Okay, all right. Okay, so essentially, you're in the business of selling mining stock, which is why you're a sell side analyst, right? Okay, understood. Does that not bite itself? Like, how can you, from a neutral standpoint, analyze these companies while selling their stock or being incentivized to sell as much stock as you can?
Yeah, so you know there are some very strict regulations with the SEC that we abide by, and that we completely have separate divisions, right? So we have an investment banking team at the bank that focuses solely on working with senior leadership of these miners to help them look about raising external capital in the way of equity raises, as we've seen through the form of at-the-market offerings, for instance, and that's on their side of the house. There's a completely other side of the house which I operate in, where I provide objective fundamental research on these companies. So, regardless of their relationship with the bank, my duty here is to provide thoughtful, objective research to investors, and look at these companies through an objective
Okay, now how did you come about this? I mean, nobody has a, hey, I studied Bitcoin at university story. How did you get
lens.
into the sector, and why mining specifically?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And as I alluded to before, I've been in the industry for about 15 years now, mainly as an equity research analyst, covered a wide range of sectors. I actually initially found out about Bitcoin back in 2011, but, you know, unfortunately really didn't start doing the work and researching it until 2019. So about 5 years ago now. And then I had the opportunity to become a full-time dedicated crypto analyst, over 3 years ago now, when I created and launched Cantor Fitzgerald's crypto research franchise before joining H.C. Wainwright, where I've been for the last 2 years now. So, you know, in terms of what attracted me to the industry, you know, I look at Bitcoin as democratizing, you know, financial services in terms of providing a store of value to investors through or by means of a decentralized monetary system. And that is very different from what we've seen with the legacy system. So if you look at the traditional banking sector, which I had covered, in addition to financial technology companies, they rely on antiquated systems that can be very costly, that take long times for settlement. And I look at Bitcoin as that transformational asset that not only acts as a store of value, but long term as this payment monetary system that can effectively be adopted by anywhere, anyone across the globe. And you know, coming up, you know, from a relatively humble background, you know, financially speaking, this really appealed to me because I think about, you know, folks maybe in underserved parts of the world that maybe don't have access to financial services, and Bitcoin really opens that gateway for them.
Yeah, I mean, it comes with a lot of education, right? And education is key, no matter whether you are in sub-Saharan Africa trying to promote lightning, or if you are on Wall Street trying to sell mining stock. right? So before I ask the question around education, Mike, can you explain to me and my audience what the average customer of yours looks like? Where, what does on average the money come from for these mining stock? Is it individuals or is it family offices? Or who do you raise from?
Yes. So if you look at, you know, my audience, those that you know, follow my research, it runs the gamut, right? So you have your large hedge funds of the world, like your 0.72s, your Citadels, your large asset managers, you know, such as Fidelity or Wellington. But you also have some family offices in the mix as well. So some high net worth individuals that look to allocate to the mining space that follow my research. And as I mentioned, on the other side of the house, in terms of the investment banking relationships, they work directly with the end client, which would be a Bitcoin mining company.
All right. And how much education is necessary for you or do you have to do on the Bitcoin topic itself before you can sell somebody an investment into a Bitcoin mining company?
You mean in terms of what an investor should do or what I have done to ramp up on the space?
So my idea around the question is for somebody to invest in Bitcoin mining stock, they have to understand what Bitcoin is.
Sure.
Right? Because after all the revenue cash flows are Bitcoin. And so if you don't understand what it is, how can you properly value the mining stock? So if you are the one that's selling that stock, how much education goes into explaining what Bitcoin is in the first place? Or is that sort of a given with all the people that contact you?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. And I would say my conversations with investors have really evolved throughout the years. It's no longer a conversation about what is Bitcoin? Is this asset going to be here over the long term? I think, you know, investors are largely, you know, on board now with what this does, what Bitcoin is and how it operates. And then from there, if investors are really subscribing regularly to my research or speaking to me, it's really because they are bought into Bitcoin, right? They do see the fundamental value and they do have a bullish long-term trajectory on the digital asset itself. So we have that buy-in, presumably, with the investors we're speaking to. So then it's like, what is the best, you know, sort of operations you should be looking at as it relates to a Bitcoin miner, right? But yes, I think, you know, if you rewind years back, I think there was a lot of uncertainty around Bitcoin. And I think the big game-changing you know, event we saw was in January, where the SEC approved and launched, I think, these 11 spot Bitcoin ETFs in the United States, which was a huge deal because it legitimized the asset class. And it also spurred significant incremental inflows into Bitcoin. And it had investors really wake up to realize, like, this asset's not going anywhere.
Yeah, it's not just some gambling token anymore at that point.
That's right.
To people in suits, I guess. Yeah, no, that's very interesting. Is it the same sort of clientele that you keep serving since then, or have there been a bunch of new entrants knocking on your door as well, saying, hey, we've done the work on previously on Bitcoin, now it's sort of solidified through the ETFs, and we're now wanting to look at mining stock as well? And what is their main reason to do so, Mike? Are they hoping to outperform Bitcoin with it? If there is now a spot Bitcoin ETF, that's obviously the much easier route to allocate to Bitcoin. How does that play together?
Yeah, I think there are a few questions in there, but all great. So I think, you know, starting off with the first question with the conversations, right? So I think there has been a lot more interest post the ETF launch from an investor standpoint, both on Bitcoin itself and in the mining space. And not only just from investors, but media outlets, right? So I've been, you know, reached out to by a lot of the major media outlets regarding my views on the Bitcoin miners and Bitcoin. So there's a general buzz that we've seen really pick up here over the past few months, which is really encouraging. As it relates to the Bitcoin ETFs versus the Bitcoin mining stock and why an investor would want to choose one over the other, you know, taking a step back, if we look at, you know, the Bitcoin mining stock performance year to date, you know, most of the miners, if not all, have really underperformed Bitcoin. Which is unusual when you see Bitcoin prices rising, because usually mining stocks tend to outperform, right? If you look at last year, miners outperformed the underlying asset by 2.5x, right? So I look at the average return for a Bitcoin miner last year, it was 385%. I think Bitcoin returned about 153%. So those are big numbers, right? And we go into this year and we see this underperformance. And I attribute it to a few factors. One of the biggest factors, to your point, Jesse, is the launch of these ETFs. There's a lot more competition for investor capital as it relates to gaining exposure to Bitcoin now than there was before. So some investors may have a preference for just buying the underlying, you know, ETF or perhaps Bitcoin directly. We would argue that if you have a fundamentally bullish stance on Bitcoin, the best way to get exposure to Bitcoin is through owning a Bitcoin mining stock. Because of the reason I mentioned before, that leveraged upside potential to the future price appreciation of Bitcoin, right? So Bitcoin miners acquire Bitcoin for less than current spot market prices. If you look at Bitcoin today, it's trading at, I don't know, 69,000 or so. On average, the large publicly traded miners can produce a coin on an all-in basis, right? So electricity costs, operating costs, for about 45,000. Some are lower, some are higher. So you see that, you know, investors can access Bitcoin for a lower price point than they would be able to acquire in the spot market through the shares of a Bitcoin miner. Additionally, the miners directly benefit from transaction fees and rising transaction fees in the Bitcoin network, which the ETFs do not. So there are a lot of unique characteristics and compelling reasons why an investor would want to hold shares of a mining stock as opposed to a spot ETF.
Okay, I wrote about six questions more down for you.
All right.
So when you said for around 44,000, 45,000, that immediately sparks the thought of me, okay, allegedly, right? Yes, they have to put out monthly reports, but do you have to be an expert in reading those? Do you have to understand what words exactly mean in SEC regulation and what you need to report when X or Y appears? I'm a layman. I don't do any mining stock investments because it's not my world and I don't understand it well enough, right? So the question there is, Mike, how closely can you actually estimate the performance of these miners? How much is intuition and a lot of talking to the industry players? Can I, as a sole investor, just read the monthly reports and come to accurate conclusions? And let me just preface this before you answer also by, I'm not sure whether you've stumbled across analysts like Penny Ether on Twitter before, and those guys who are taking those monthly report apart and saying, hey, actually what they're writing here is completely misinterpreted and it actually looks like this, which makes me think, hey, it's actually much more complicated than one thinks.
Yeah, I think, you know, Jesse, one of the great things about our sector in the Bitcoin mining space is its level of transparency. You know, I've covered several sectors throughout my career on Wall Street, and a little of the transparency of this business as it relates to the monthly production updates specifically is really important because it gives a close look at the company's operations on a month-to-month basis to investors and stakeholders that I think is really important to see the progress of their hash rate expansion, you know, Bitcoin production, and Bitcoin production relative to deployed capacity. Right. So in terms of evaluating these monthly production metrics, it's great to see them at their face value. Right. You'll see the miners provide, you know, hash rate, as I mentioned, total amount of Bitcoin produced, perhaps how much Bitcoin is held on balance sheet at a point in time. But then we take it a step further and we do some more thorough analysis where we try to determine, OK, relative to a miner's deployed hash rate, how much Bitcoin should they have produced versus what they did to determine how efficient their operations are, right? So metrics such as that would be a little bit more involved for, you know, an investor perhaps looking to evaluate the space, but it is an important metric to consider. You know, but all the other metrics that are listed on there in face value, I think it does give really good transparency into the miner operations. Hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, no, look, I mean, again, it's, just get the feeling you can read all the monthly reports, but I'm almost as smart as I was before if I don't know exactly what I'm looking for and have the background that you have, which is, I guess, why people pay you as well, right? To have the background, to be able to interpret things. So I would just be curious, what are your key metrics? Like, what are the things that you sort of check every month that you go after? Because all of these miners will say, oh, we're specializing on efficiency, or we have the most total hash rate, or we have the most ASICs deployed, or we consume, like, there's all these sort of different storylines, right? What do you focus on?
Yeah, so we actually put out a thorough monthly production analysis on the space each and every month for the miners. And specifically, the metrics that we track very closely, some of these that I had mentioned in my previous comments, certainly hash rate. What is the total amount of deployed capacity a miner has online today? And that's represented in exahash per second. We also look at total Bitcoin production. You know, what was the total amount of Bitcoin produced in a given month? And how did that Bitcoin production stack up against their deployed hash rate? We also want to look at fleet efficiency as measured as joules per terahash. And that just shows, again, how energy efficient a miner's fleet is. That's a critical metric as it relates to the profitability of a miner, in addition to power costs, right? How much is a miner paying for cost? Typically, you might not find that in a monthly production update, but to the extent that we can capture that metric, that is critically important. Because power costs make up the bulk of a miner's direct operating expenses.
Can I ask you something? Right? Why can you not find that in the reports?
You know, miners typically provide this on a quarterly basis in their earnings release and in their investor presentations. You know, you may have some that will disclose it in their monthly production updates, but I would say it's a metric that you'll generally find more on a quarterly basis relative to some of these others, right? But what you will find in the monthly update too, generally, is the amount of Bitcoin held on balance sheet, which is another important metric to highlight. So how much are they accumulating in Bitcoin relative to the amount they're actually mining?
Oh, okay. I mean, it would be fairly simple, I would think to like look at a quarterly report, see how much cost there was of electricity, and then just say, this is your all-in or this is your average cost across all your sites, right? And then if you say, okay, how much should they have produced and how much did they actually produce? And then what's the efficiency? So how much power did they consume? Multiply that with the price and boom. It seems to me often that a lot of the differences come from additional cost, not the electricity cost. That's fairly straightforward, but it is, you know, how much do they pay for labor, wages, how much boni are paid out, I don't know, overheads, admin, expansions, you know, in like, where do they get their capital from? Do they have capital cost, past loans that they take on? I think that's, would you agree with me that that's where the biggest differences lie?
I agree. I think we should see some more standardized disclosures on that front. You know, as we know, the Bitcoin mining landscape is a capital intensive business, right? So, you know, thinking about, you know, capital needs for the industry and the sector, as you alluded to, CapEx, generally what we found is that about 70% of a miner's capital expenditures are targeted to ASICs and the underlying mining equipment, and the balance of 30% or so is geared towards infrastructure. You know, some miners are good about disclosing some of these metrics in terms of cost per megawatt to build out a site, as well as disclosing some pricing mechanisms with Bitmain or MicroBT. You know, I think, you know, making sure that we can get a nice standardized process going with some of these capital needs. And then as it relates to operating expenses, as I mentioned, power costs make up the bulk of a miner's direct production costs. But as you mentioned, you have other operating overhead expenses, things like that, which, you know, are represented different ways on their income statement, which is filed on a quarterly basis. So we evaluate those metrics quite a bit. And, you know, not all miners are created equal. You know, when I talk about 45,000 all-in production costs, some are higher, some are lower. And, you know, it's something that, you know, you'll more or less be able to find in all the financial statements, but you have to work and analyze the data in such a way that you really come out and determine, you know, who has a really good cost structure.
Okay. Around the halving, right, Mike, did anything change for you before the halving and now? Was there a heavy focus on how miners were positioning themselves, what machines they were buying? Do you go as deep as figuring out what sort of the failure rates are of certain ASICs and then looking at what machines are being purchased? You know, famously, the Riot guys bought a bunch of MicroBT machines. They partnered with MicroBT, I think, and that's what they're going with forward, versus all the other guys that still stick with Bitmain. Do you go into as deep of a level? So let me step back. Two questions again. Did anything change from sort of the valuation metrics and tactics from before the halving to now? And then do you go as deep as looking at hardware purchased?
Yes. So I think valuation would be an important one to drill down on, right? So miner valuations are some of the most dynamic valuations we've seen out there. And it's important to have a stance on where we believe we are in the Bitcoin price cycle, because that really dictates where miners' valuation will land at any particular point. And what I mean by that specifically, so if you look at the bull market back in 2021, mining stocks reached, you know, double-digit revenue multiples. That means the multiple that an investor is applying to a miner's forecasted revenue stream and determining the equity valuation of the company. And then we saw that number get down to below one at the depths of the bear market in 2022. So valuation metrics are very dynamic in this space. Miners right now, if you look at the top 10, they're trading at about 4.5 times 2024 revenue estimates. We're valuing the group in our coverage at 6.5 times, right? So just to give you some sort of framework as to how you look at different stages of the Bitcoin price cycle and where mining stocks may trade at any given point in time. Now, you bring up a good question in that how has our views shifted, if at all, in a post-halving environment? So we're already factoring all this in with our current valuations, right? So our numbers factor in the halving of the block reward after April 19th for each block solved by a miner down to 3.125 from 6.25. As you know, the economics have really collapsed quite a bit, and that was largely expected, not only by me, but by the industry. So hash prices today are about 45% below where they were pre-halving. I think, you know, that other 5% has been supported a little bit by rising transaction fees. But for the most part, this is a widely broadcasted event. Investors knew about it ahead of time. We certainly incorporated the halving into our models as it relates to the impact on miner revenues and profitability. And based on where we are right now, we still think miners are attractively valued relative to our near-term growth expectations for Bitcoin.
Okay, and do you look at hardware that they buy? Sorry, I'm just going to repeat that one more time.
Yes. Yes, we do. We do. So I would say the most popular machines, right, and actually taking a step back. So in terms of the miner approaches coming into the halving, so as you've seen, several large purchase orders from Bitmain and MicroBT from the large miners to acquire the latest generation hardware, not only to enhance scale and build capacity, but to also, again, have the most efficient fleet, which really helps, you know, with the energy consumption and profitability for the group. So you really saw a wave of spending on these machines. I would say the most popular right now we've been seeing is the S21 and S21 Pros from Bitmain, as well as the T21s. And then MicroBT, they have their M60Ss, as you mentioned, as Riot has purchased. So that's really been the focus for the miners in terms of model ASICs.
Okay, another question around valuations, Mike. If you put all the groups that you're covering on a blank slate, and you had to order them by stock value, right? And then compare it to the market as it is today, would it look the same? Would you completely disagree with the market? And I'm asking that because often I feel like there are so many aspects that are very young, very fresh. There's not a lot of liquidity, for instance, in the hash rate derivatives, right? So it's tough to accurately price those. Would you be confident in being able to And again, there's no fair in the market, right? The market does what the market does, and the valuations are what they are. But would you agree with the market as it stands today or not?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I think you'll see a situation just like you will in any sector where some miners are fairly valued, some mining stocks are undervalued, and some are overvalued. And that's in relation to their future growth prospects, you know, some of the metrics we pointed out in terms of revenue and earnings, hash rate expansion, and again, relative to where the stocks currently trade in the market. So there are times where you see these discrepancies between a fundamental value of a miner and where the market is currently pricing the shares. I think you'll always see that in any sector. Our sector is no different.
Okay. Very interesting. The short selling story. Can you sum that up for me? The event with the hedge fund that published this Twitter thread around putting a heavy short on Riot, because here I'm gonna uncover my naivete here to you right now, because I thought when you said sell side analyst, I was thinking, ah, okay, this guy is sort of in the same field where he tries to get, push prices down or whatever, right? But you're not actually selling to others. Can you sum that up for my audience? What happened there? Why do they do that? And what's the strategy there?
Yeah, I think, you know, you have these hedge funds come out sometimes and, you know, put out short reports on companies to, you know, potentially try to push shares down because they have a short position. So there could be a little bit of, you know, conflict of interest there. But, you know, looking besides that, I think the report was from Carisdale, you know, and they made some pretty bold comments about the Bitcoin mining sector and Riot's operations, frankly, a majority of which I disagree with. You know, so specifically what they said was, you know, the sector isn't going to be around 5 years. It's a terrible business model and so on and so forth. Economics for the miners are such that, you know, they're not, you know, generating any profits, you know. And I go back to that number I shared with you before. If you look at it, the miners on average, at least the large ones, their all-in cost of mine is 45,000, right? Bitcoin's at almost 70,000. So they have a lot of breathing room in terms of making money there on a cash basis, which is the critical point. So I would, you know, push back on, you know, some of these harsh statements about the industry. I think that the author or investor really doesn't have a favorable stance on Bitcoin, perhaps. And, you know, taking a step back, if you're going to be buying a miner, you need to really be bought into Bitcoin, and you need to have a fundamental bullish view on Bitcoin over the long term. Otherwise, it really doesn't make sense to hold a miner, right? You wouldn't own a gold mining stock if you didn't really believe gold prices were going to go anywhere or potentially go to zero. So I think there are a lot of fallacies in the argument there. They did speak to Riot's operations specifically as well, pretty comprehensively in the report. And one point that I think did have a bit of merit was the, you know, the lack of production of Riot's mining operations. You know, I would agree with that. And I think that's been a major headwind for the company and the stock here, is that relative to their deployed hash rate, they've really, you know, not produced as many Bitcoin as they should have with that level of capacity online. I think there were a number of operational challenges they struggled from. Firstly, some infrastructure related issues with their immersion cooled building at the Rockdale facility in Texas that kept a slug of miners offline for a while. And then also they had some Bitmain XPs deployed in one of their air cooled buildings, which is a mining rig that you really can't push at too high of a temperature. Otherwise, it'll really underperform. And, you know, that's what they saw, right? So in terms of uptime, Bitcoin production, I do agree, you know, that is, you know, a point of issue, if you will, for Riot. But, you know, if you look at the company's position today, they have well over $1 billion of total liquidity on the books. They have the lowest net power costs in the group. Last year, it was 2.2 cents a kilowatt hour after some of their, you know, unique power strategy elements really kicked in. So, you know, when I look at the liquidity, the growth prospects, the power cost, we actually have a buy rating on the stock, right? So there's a lot, as I mentioned, we disagree with within the report. But I think Riot's at a critical inflection point right now where they have to deliver on their year-end 24 hash rate target of 31.5 exahash to really gain investor credibility again. Because, you know, frankly, they have underperformed from an operational standpoint. But they do have a large purchase order of MicroBT to really fill out capacity over the next couple of years. They have 1 gigawatt of total power capacity at their Corsicana facility in Texas. So, you know, I think this is going to be, you know, I don't want to say a make or break year for Riot, but they really have to show that they can generate really improved operational efficiency from their fleet to get that credibility back from investors.
Look, this is exactly what I meant earlier by it, this being such a weird space for me, right? Because on the one side, this hedge fund will say, hey, like Bitcoin's not going to be around for much longer, which is obviously super ignorant statement, right? But then right. On the other side, they look at the specific ASIC that a company runs and what the effects are on temperature with these aluminium hashboards and not. And like that baffles me. And that sort of links to my insecurity almost around mining stock investments, because I don't know if, let's say I sit down and I do the work, right, from a somewhat educated standpoint, and I come to a conclusion that this is a buy, for me a strong buy or whatever, and we can get into what your top picks are. If the market goes against me, because some hedge fund will put out a report that Bitcoin is only going to be around for so long, and then it sells, like it's such a long-term thing for me, right? And it has so many variables that sort of make me shy away from investing in mining stock directly. And doesn't warrant, for me personally, doesn't warrant the risk reward play, right? Versus just investing into Bitcoin and putting it on my hardware wallet. Right. Yeah. Does that make sense to you? Like how much, again, it links to back to the education question, right? You saying, hey, like you probably get calls. Okay. What do you think about this report? And then you have to talk to your clients and say, hey, this is how I see things and this is why, and yada, 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 yada. Does that sort of throw over your whole schedule for the day? And all of a sudden you have to do something completely different that you didn't think you had to do. What does that look like?
Well, first of all, Jesse, it's never a dull moment in the world of a Wall Street analyst, right? Whether it be, you know, just the day-to-days of any analyst, but specifically in the crypto and Bitcoin mining sector. So yeah. We definitely work hard and we have a lot of interesting things to look at, but absolutely love it. As it relates to, you know, picking companies and buying stocks of miners, you know, I think we should just take a step back and, you know, think about the world of investing itself, right? Anytime you invest in a company, you want to buy a company that's ultimately going to generate shareholder value over the long term. And I think the Bitcoin mining operators that are going to be positioned to do this are those that have really good scale, so by deployed exahash, above average fleet efficiency. So if you're buying the latest generation equipment at sub 20 joules per terahash, you're probably in a good spot. Relatively low power costs. So if you're keeping power costs under, let's say, 4.5 cents a kilowatt hour, and you have that pretty locked in, and potentially with the opportunity to let that flow through and decline over time. And another key metric is strong operational performance. So being able to extract as much value from your operations as you possibly can via Bitcoin production, right? So I think those are critical things that investors should look at when they evaluate the superior operator of Bitcoin mining infrastructure. And being vertically integrated is key to that. So we're more of the belief that, you know, own and operated models will outperform hosted models over time. Because if you have a vertically integrated operation, you control your destiny. You can control the miners deployed at your facilities. You can control the expansion potential at those facilities. You generally have lower operating costs because you don't pay a markup to the hosting provider to run your equipment for you. So we think, you know, again, vertically integrated miners with high uptime levels, low power costs, strong fleet efficiencies should really, prevail in this market.
Yeah, I think that's the story, vertical integration. This is why you see Marathon owning and buying sites, going away from their hosted model, precisely because they don't want to pay somebody else's margin down the line. What do you sort of see as the next trend in Bitcoin mining? Is it diversification? Is it immersion cooling, two-phase immersion? Like, what do you see as sort of the next big trend after vertical integration?
Yeah, I think, ultimately, can we see more projects that are co-locating next to power generation facilities and really getting in behind the meter here to power generation sources so they don't, suck up power on the grid? That's potentially something we see here longer term. I think over the short term, we're going to see a lot more M&A activity. We've started to see early signs of this now. Generally speaking, the large producers are in okay shape today, right? They're generating decent margins. If I look at the margins today, they're over 50% gross margins in terms of direct production costs relative to where Bitcoin is currently trading. So very healthy considering all things considered with the halving. However, you have smaller players with less access to capital that maybe have less efficient mining fleets and higher power costs that are going to need to power with some of the bigger guys here. So I would expect to see an acceleration in acquisition activity, especially with hash prices trading, at the 5.5 cents a terahash a day right now. I think you do see an environment where, you're not going to have a lot of miners hold on at these economics for long. So they're going to need to partner and be acquired by some of these larger institutions. And I think that comes in the form of more tuck-in type plays. So you'll see a larger miner with a strong balance sheet go out and acquire a smaller mining facility, swap out that miner's rigs for their own, more efficient fleets, and really take ownership of those facilities. I think that's how the M&A landscape plays out. Because when I speak to the large mining management teams right now, there's a disconnect between what an acquirer is willing to pay versus what the target company actually is expecting. So until we start to see those expectations align a little bit more closely, we're going to continue to see more private, smaller miner acquisitions.
I think you're kind of hinting at it. I wanted to ask this also, the Riot and Bitfarms situation, where they're going out and buying large chunk of shares of Bitfarms. What is the play there? I mean, we're already on the topic of Riot. I'm sure you have some insight there.
So, effectively, Riot came out and announced recently that they had put out a proposal to Bitfarms board to acquire all outstanding shares of the company for $950 million, right? At the time, I think it was a 20-24% premium to where Bitfarms currently traded in the market. Bitfarms immediately, rejected that offer, claiming that it undervalued the company, and we agree. So if you look at our numbers today, we're valuing Bitfarms at about $1.4 billion, and that's versus the $950 million that Riot proposed to acquire the company. So you fast forward, Riot currently owns 12% of Bitfarms. They have been attempting this hostile takeover, if you will, of the company by trying to shake up the board of directors. What I'd say is the response that Bitfarms has had in recent days, as you may have seen, as they adopted a shareholder rights plan, which is effectively in our industry called a poison pill. And what a poison pill does is it deters the potential acquirer from acquiring more shares of the company and making it more prohibitively expensive to acquire the institution. Effectively, what would happen is, let's say Riot were to acquire more than a 15% stake in the company. As part of the plan, Bitfarms would attach an extra right or a share to existing shareholders to allow them to acquire that share at a very discounted rate to where the market trades. And I apologize if I'm getting too much in the weeds here.
No, 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 please, it's great.
Yeah, so effectively, it would dilute Riot's position because they wouldn't have that right. Again, this is assuming they go over that 15% threshold, and all other shareholders will be able to increase their positions at a lower cost, right? So again, going back to this type of arrangement would make it prohibitively expensive and less worthwhile for Riot to engage in the hostile takeover.
Where do you see that going?
Yeah, I think usually these things are effective. So I think it will deter, Riot from accumulating north of a 15% stake in Bitfarms. What I will say is Riot still has the ability as a shareholder to request, new board of directors via, agreement upon other shareholders of the institution. Again, I don't see this proposal or takeover initially going in Riot's favor. So I think, for the meantime and for the foreseeable future, Bitfarms should continue to operate as is, continuing out their business plan for the year. But the management team did say that they're open to looking at strategic alternatives, including the potential sale of the organization for the right price. So I wouldn't rule out any acquisition there, but I don't think Riot's attempt will be successful.
Okay. We already mentioned vertical integration. There were two stocks recently, I think TeraWulf was one of them, that sharply increased in value because they own so much of the underlying infrastructure already. I think that was the reason. You correct me if I'm wrong. But where does the market put the importance of that? Of companies owning their own electrical equipment and infrastructure, and also potentially being able to pivot into the flavor of the year so far, AI and everything that's connected to that.
Yeah, I think it's critically important, and the market should be valuing shares of vertically integrated miners at a higher multiple than non-vertically integrated miners. There are a lot of operational benefits to it. I alluded to some of this before as it relates to being able to have direct control of your operations, your ability to deploy software to manage your mining fleet, to curtail when it makes economic sense to do so, being really active on the energy front. And also being able to have the expandability of your own facilities if you wanted to go out and add another data center at one of your sites. And from an economic standpoint, you're paying the power cost to, the utility, not to the hosting provider, which generally takes a markup on that, right? So from an economic standpoint, it's much more profitable, all else being equal, generally speaking, to run a vertically integrated operation. So I do believe that they should get a premium multiple from investors. And then you mentioned some of these alternative applications like AI. So some miners are looking to diversify there. And data center power capacity, same sort of setup, right? You launch a data center, you plug in some equipment, NVIDIA H100s, for example. I would say the nitty-gritty infrastructure, once you get past the data center build, perhaps, right, is a little bit more nuanced to operating a GPU versus an ASIC. So, that could provide some challenges to revamping, let's say, a purpose-built Bitcoin mining facility. So I'm of the belief that, I'm really taking a wait-and-see approach for some of these AI business models in the Bitcoin mining space, unless they are actually purpose-built for AI services as opposed to running ASIC miners. Looking at a pure-play Bitcoin miner, for example, that's really where we see most of the businesses go. But you do see some of these miners come out and launch, these AI businesses as well, which, again, we're taking more of a wait and see approach. And of course, Scientific is one that has demonstrated that they can really scale their HPC business. But you listen to their management team, and they're talking again about retooling, needing to retool some data centers to really handle that AI infrastructure. So it's not just a plug and play type of thing, and it is a slightly different setup from our understanding.
Top picks, Mike, before we start closing out, where would you put your money? If I came to you today and wanted to invest $10 million, what mining stock do you tell me to buy?
Yeah, so our top pick for 2024 is CleanSpark, one of the best performing miners here to date. As you may know, they have operations spanning across three states in the U.S., Georgia, Mississippi, Wyoming. They're one of the largest scale providers or operators right now. Vertically integrated, as we talked about, rock solid balance sheet, highly efficient operations, low production costs, and a really great management team. If you look at how they've been able to expand capacity in the first, 5 months of the year, they have grown their hash rate by more than any other publicly listed miner. They had an 80% increase in their hash rate since the end of last year. They're currently operating at 18 exahash a second. That's the third largest miner by scale today. Management's guiding to 32 exahash by the end of the year, which I think they'll get to. And to support, this aggressive growth plan, the team has actually locked in a contract with Bitmain to acquire 160,000 units, most of which are S21 Pros, the most efficient miner on the market today in terms of air-cooled miners, for $16 a terahash. You know, it's one of the lowest rates we've seen for this equipment in the market. Outside of that, I mentioned the strong balance sheet. You know, they have $750 million or so of total liquidity between cash and Bitcoin on the balance sheet. That's going to allow them to engage in M&A. You know, management is looking to acquire more infrastructure-related opportunities here over the near term to really support this incremental expansion, and they have been acquisitive to date. And, you know, the last couple things I'd highlight here is low production costs. You know, we estimate, as we talked about before, if you're looking at that 45,000 number on average, they're below 40, right? So they're one of the lowest cost operators in the space. And they may not have the lowest power costs, but they have extremely high operational efficiency and good scale, which really helps them to lower their production costs. You know, if you look at one of the metrics we closely evaluate, this realized hash rate ratio. So that's basically, this is a miner's hash rate. This is the hash rate that the miner had based on their Bitcoin production for a month. And if that number is 100%, that means they utilized 100% of their capacity efficiently. CleanSpark is consistently over 95%. So I if I was an investor, you know, that's my top pick in space.
Okay. What's the second best pick?
Second best pick, a stock that has had a really great run over the past few weeks is IREN. You know, they have operations in British Columbia, Canada, and more recently in Texas. We like IREN for a lot of the same reasons we like CleanSpark, right? They are also a vertically integrated operator of highly efficient Bitcoin mining data centers. They have good scale, low production costs, and really compelling growth plans this year. So they're currently at 10 exahash. They're guiding to 30 by the end of the year. They have a track record of executing well against guidance. So, you know, we have no reason to believe that they can't triple their hash rate by the end of this year. They have their purchase agreements with Bitmain in place to get them there. They're on track to double infrastructure capacity to over 500 megawatts across all of their facilities by the end of this year as they continue to build upon, you know, some of these growth plans. And, you know, pretty much neck and neck with CleanSpark as it relates to production costs to produce one coin. So, you know, I think one other thing that, you know, investors have liked about the stock here, the company, is the AI optionality. So they recently launched an AI cloud services business where they basically have purchased NVIDIA H100 GPUs that they're hosting and deploying for AI workloads. And, you know, these GPUs, which they have over 800 of them, is expected to generate between 14 to 17 million of annualized gross profit. So it is material, and it is a highly reoccurring, you know, high margin revenue stream that can help offset maybe some potential pressure on the Bitcoin mining side. So those are our two top picks in the space right now.
Mike, is there anything that you couldn't highlight because I didn't ask it? Anything that you wish you had highlighted before?
You know, I'll throw, I guess, one other company in, more or less a sleeper, we would call it, perhaps the most attractively valued miner under our coverage, and that's Bitfarms. You know, they've been in the headlines for some of this, you know, M&A activity or conversations with Riot, but I would say the company is poised to more than triple their hash rate in 24 this year to 21 exahash, and improve their fleet efficiency by 40%. I mean, these are big numbers, and we don't think investors are fully appreciating the company's, you know, transformational fleet upgrade and growth plans here. So if you're looking for a very discounted mining stock to buy, that's potentially one to look at.
Okay. I mean, yeah, because you said this, let me ask one more question. And I ask this usually to all the management staff of publicly listed machines, miners. How do you think the sort of long-term ethos, the long-term thinking the low time preference mantra of Bitcoin in general. How does that clash with, hey, we have to have monthly numbers, they need to look good, we need to put up exahash as fast as possible? Like, how does that clash in your world? Do you see that clashing at all? Is there any, I hear they put the New York sirens in the background. Is there any clash with that, or not really?
Yeah, let's just say this, Jesse. I'm glad I'm not a CEO of a publicly traded mining company. I don't envy these guys. To your point, you know, having the long-term mindset on being a Bitcoin investor, you know, being it for the long haul versus, you know, quarter to quarter expectations from Wall Street and investors to operating a Bitcoin mining business is challenging, right? But I think if you have a fundamental belief in Bitcoin and you realize that miners provide unique exposure to Bitcoin by way of leverage upside potential in bull markets, and conversely, you know, more downside potential in bear markets, you know, I think it's worth considering, right? So to your point, you know, there's no great answer I could give in terms of how these guys are, you know, managing that dynamic. What I would say is that it's important, just like any other sector in the market, is that the management teams are articulating as clearly and transparently as they can their growth expectations with the street, i.e. be it hash rate guidance targets, and that they're able to execute against that. Because if they put out a bogey, they don't get there, and the stock crashes or, you know, corrects, that looks bad on the management. So I think managing expectations through guidance, measured prudent guidance, is important.
All right. Mike, does Bitcoin consume enough electricity or not?
Not even close. So if you look at the Cambridge data here, I think it's 17 gigawatts globally, which is just about a half of 1% of total electricity production in the world. You know, we're talking about a completely decentralized digital monetary system with the hardest asset human civilization has ever seen in Bitcoin, and it only consumes half of 1% of global electricity production. We're not even close to consuming that much.
Putting it like that, I tend to agree with you. Mike, thank you so much for letting me peek behind the curtain into your world a little bit for the last hour. It was very insightful. I'm not sure I'll ever be an investor in mining stock, but if that ever changes, I'll make sure to come to you first. Very interesting, really, to see how that drives the market, how the ETFs play into this, how you value them, what you do in your line of work is very interesting. What do you want to leave folks with? Maybe give them a handoff, Mike, as to where they can find more about yourself, the company, if they ever have questions.
Yeah. I think, you know, again, H.C. Wainwright, we provide, you know, equity research and investment banking services to investors and Bitcoin mining companies. So, you know, those are, you know, that's how we're placing ourselves in the market. We do have the most differentiated research. We do have the top banking franchise in the industry. And we're very focused on this business, right? So I think, you know, considering mining stocks after careful consideration could provide amplified returns to investors looking to gain exposure to Bitcoin. So I'll leave your viewers with that. And this has been a great conversation, Jesse. I really appreciate you having me on today.
No, I appreciate your time. I know you're a busy guy. Guys, check out the show notes. There's going to be all the links there that are relevant. If you learn something new, you know what to do. Next Sunday, we speak mining again. I think we'll have a public miner on even, but I'm not sure. I'll see you there. Bye-bye.